It's 4:44 and time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan in the house with us this afternoon. Hello, sir.
Hello. And may I say, this is my boomstick. Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even better than Glenn Campbell. It's impossible now, so at least you got Bruce.
And so much easier to get these days. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think Bruce Campbell could probably get to Bangor just by opening some weird book and traveling through space and time.
If there's a guy who could do it.
And if there's a place you'd land that's actually still on Earth, I think Bangor might be the place. I definitely have this theory, especially upon, you know, reading it and stuff like that, that as soon as Stephen King dies, this entire city will just go into some weird, like,
sinkhole.
It's gone. We're just a figment of his imagination.
I could believe that. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Monday, Bruce Campbell here on Downtown Monday afternoon, Columbus Day.
Oh, that's gonna be a good talk to. That's very cool. Is this your first time chatting with him?
Yes.
That's
cool. We're excited.
That's a nice guest. That's way better than me. But I'm more regular and I'm local and I bring wine. Bruce Campbell ever bring you wine?
Not even
Bruce
once.
Campbell didn't bring you
no,
wine.
No, he did not.
Not even a Necronomicon.
Yeah, and your chin's quite fine, too.
If he brings you a Necronomicon, though, he wins.
For sure. Question. He laps the field if he does that. Yes.
Although I confess, as an Evil Dead fan, it's probably like on Netflix or something I don't have because I'm super analog, but they have like that whole Ash versus the Evil Dead or some, like a revival. It's like that new Star Trek. I'm never going to watch the new Star Trek because it's on some crazy format I will never, never get.
We do have a Book of the Dead here in the building.
Of course you do.
Jason has one.
Really?
I forget which re-release of the movies came in a
fantastic
fake human skin.
I wonder if what's his name, Gerald Winters down on Main Street has like one of those or something. Oh, I couldn't afford it though. Every time I go in there, I'm just like, I'm not going to ask, but how much is that? Oh, right. More than I can afford because it's super cool. I talked to him about a Tolkien signature, an autograph thing once, and it's like, how much? He's like, oh, it's $18,000. I'm like, oh, well, let me go ask my wife because there's a possibility that she'll say yes if she's very, very drugged. When I asked, however, she was sober. So I don't have that book.
Did she even laugh?
No.
Or did she just look at you?
It was definitely the wife look like, mm-hmm. Are we done here? Can we talk about what's for dinner? Great. That's nice.
Moving on.
Speaking of what's for dinner or what's going with dinner. So we're in America and we did California last month and now we're done with California. We've kneeled at the throne of California wines, 80% of the U.S. wine production in California, blah, 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 blah. And there is some cool stuff going on. I hope we touched on some of the cooler stuff and not just the sort of generic varieties. But now we're going to go outside that, and we're definitely going to touch on the Pacific Northwest, which is, again, hugely, hugely important and developing some really, really good wines. But today we're going to start to talk about when viticulture began in America and refresh your memory on that. And then we're going to talk about places on the East Coast. So, way back when our founding fathers were getting in here, and I'm sure I'm touching on subjects that I've touched on before because wine is cyclical. But the founding fathers came here, they really liked wine. Okay. So they brought their favorite grapes. They brought clippings of, you know, this Merlot from Bordeaux and this Pinot Noir from Burgundy, and they brought, you know, the Chardonnay and the blah, blah, blah. And of course, they didn't talk like the French people because they were mostly British. But in the end, it didn't really matter what accent they talked with. All the grapes died. And so this is where we started to see the beginnings, although they didn't see because they didn't have microscopes that were good enough, but the beginnings of the phylloxera epidemic. So the phylloxera louse, this little bug, native to the East Coast of America. Not really a problem in the West Coast, though we fixed that after a while. Gosh darn it. But early on, it wasn't a problem in the West Coast. And so early plantings over there of like the Mission grape and things like that were actually fairly successful. But on the East Coast, all those nice French varietals died. And they said, oh, bummer. And so they became actually some of the world's first great wine importers. And Kermit Lynch, who's a very, very famous French wine importer, still with us out of Berkeley, his logo is a woodcut and a quote from Thomas Jefferson that says good wine is a necessity of life for me. And so they were very, very into that, but of course they couldn't make their own, and that was a real bummer. But there were native grapes, and then sort of these hybrid varietals that came along later. And they sort of, both in the lab and in the wild, there were some weird successes that brought us some of the grapes that we now can plant in Maine, because, of course, Maine is this super cold weather climate. And so this has always struck me as a very funny thing, as a guy who's come onto the wine scene after much of the derided early attempts at, you know, sort of fun wine. But there's a grape called and a wine called Pink Catawba, which was sort of this fluffy, I don't know how you put it, aperitif beverage or whatever. But it was from originally it was grown in Ohio, that hotbed of viticulture in America. And it was very successful commercially, even so far back as the 1800s. And maintained its success up until, I don't know, Rich, I mean, with all respect, you were probably around then and I was paying attention.
Oh, I remember it well.
Okay. Yes. So if you remember it well, it means you didn't drink enough, but that's okay. But yeah,
it was I don't know. Let's take a step up from the Boone's Farm.
Right.
And the strawberry
that's right.
Ale.
That's
let's
correct.
Let's try this Pink Catawba.
It was before you got to like Matusen Lancers, but after Boone's.
It was a gateway wine.
It was like, you know, you got rid of your little, you know, crappy sports car, and before you bought the minivan, you had something like it's your station wagon. It's your sensible station wagon. But anyway, so that's what it was. So we went through, and we've talked a little bit about the, you know, the actual history part of, you know, what ruined viticulture in America, even early attempts at it. But fortunately, by the time we actually got through all the world wars and things that really tore up everything, we had learned about phylloxera. We had learned that grafting those European vines on North American rootstock prevented those vines from dying. And so that was actually allowing a lot of experimentation and plantings all up and down the East Coast, and then of course further in the West Coast, because by that time phylloxera had reached the West Coast. When we're talking about sort of mid last century up into the 60s, 70s, 80s, what happened? I sort of said the whole East Coast. Let's not talk about the whole East Coast. What we're going to do is actually we'll talk about the mid-Atlantic states later on in this month. The mid-Atlantic states are very, very important because they have a very sort of Bordelais, that's a Bordeaux-style microclimate. So places like my old home state of New Jersey, Virginia, are growing some really, really interesting Bordeaux-style varieties, as well as some other kind of weird varietals like Spain's Albarino and stuff like that. So today I wanted to talk about the Finger Lakes, because the Finger Lakes, I think, are the closest commercially successful region to what we see here in Maine. If climate change really is happening, and I'm kind of on board with it, you're going to start to see some more of these varieties that have been successful in the Finger Lakes start to take root up here, literally and figuratively. And especially the wine we're going to be drinking today, we're going to be drinking a Riesling. And I don't really know why there aren't more plantings of Rieslings up here. I'm sure some of the growers up here could tell me why there are not. There are certainly hybrids that involve the Riesling that they were created in a lab. But I don't really know why there's not more plantings. I mean, somebody has planted Chardonnay in Owl's Head. I don't know why we don't have Riesling up here. But it's very prone to cold extremes here. And it is, of course, in the Finger Lakes. In fact, as recently as 2003, a massive freeze killed most of the vines. What are the Finger Lakes, really quick? I always assume that people kind of know what I'm talking about, but maybe people don't. So in upstate New York, near where I went to college and near Cooperstown, for anybody who's a big fan of baseball, that's where the Hall of Fame is. A little farther to the west from where Cooperstown is, there are these sort of finger-like appendage looking lakes that were carved out by glaciers a long, long time ago, even before Rich was around. They are very steep. They are really, really excellent drainage. They are fantastic for viticulture, except that it's really freaking cold a lot of the time. So guy named Constantine Frank, and we were drinking, actually, it's the same wine, and actually, I thought this was really cool, the same vintage of the same wine that we drank last year, because I wanted to see how it progressed, and indeed, it is a little softer and more luscious and not quite as zingy and acidic as it was last year, which is how that's supposed to work. Thank goodness. it's very interesting. Now, hybrid versus true vinifera, only about 15% of the region's 9,000 plus acres is planted to vinifera. Those are the grapes from Europe that we like to drink. Everything else is planted to hybrids. And it is those hybrids, again, that you'll probably likely see up here, both red and white. And they make some good wine. But I think we've sort of all agreed that they don't make nearly as good a wine as vinifera itself. Now, the wine today, as I said, this is vinifera. This is pure Riesling. This is the 2015 semi-dry Riesling from Constantin Frank. Now, these guys very much follow the German model of making a semi-dry Riesling and Riesling in general. So just to remind everybody, Riesling is an extraordinarily high in acidity grape, which helps because it also is one that's very often considered sweet and even vinified sweet. And that acidity really, really is the thing that helps make it a palatable table wine as opposed to like a dessert wine or something like that. You really need that focus. And it's also one of the things that helps Riesling age so well. So as I said, you know, we tried this very wine last year and as it had just been released, frankly, it was still, you know, very, it showed you where your enamel was lacking, I suppose. Yeah. and this year, I mean, you get a little more lychee and it's really quite pleasant. And I recommend to people who, quote, don't like Riesling because perhaps you had the similar experience to the Pinkataba and Matusen sort of thing. Like you had early efforts at getting the U.S. Riesling and Liebfraumilch and stuff like that. That stuff's terrible. It's sugar water. Yeah. And I advise you, if you consider yourself a serious wine lover, to go back and try some Rieslings because they can be as zingy as a good Sauvignon Blanc. And they can be as unctuous as a good dessert wine and anything in between. So I would definitely check those out. Carrie's looking at pictures of Tom Petty right now. You're killing me. Wasn't that awful?
Yeah. We were talking about that early in the show. It just doesn't seem real.
It doesn't seem real. In fact, we're gonna dedicate this next sip, this toast, to Tom Petty, who is absolutely one of my all-time favorite musicians. And Mike Campbell, his guitarist, remains, as he is still with us, thank goodness, probably the most underrated guitarist in the game, hands down, period.
Well, and Ben Montench,
also awesome.
Top three keyboardists in rock history.
Yeah, and with them since the beginning.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. Has nothing to do with wine, but I did. That's cool that it's up there because I definitely wanted to throw that in.
This is great. I like this a lot.
It's delicious. So we've got two more minutes left. Things coming up at the store. Lots of cool things. We did have our Women in Wine event this past Friday. I hope kittens got adopted. There was a poster for a particularly fluffy looking thing that I was so close, but I just can't. I can't open my heart again. That was cool. So up for our regularly scheduled tasting this month at Bangor Wine and Cheese, it'll be Bangor Beer Week. And for all you beer lovers out there, almost every brewery and beer bar and shop is going to be having some sort of event or multiple events. So we're going to be doing something called Cheers, a fantastique fundraiser for the Bangor Symphony Orchestra. And that is because that following Sunday will be the Bangor Orchestra presenting Symphony Fantastique, as well as some other seasonal classics that I think shouldn't be missed. And if anybody's a fan of good piano playing, the soloist William Wolfram is sick. We were really lucky to get him. So check that out and come on down on, I believe it's the 19th of October for that fundraiser from 5 to 7 p.m. And, boy, we've got a lot of stuff. Uncorked, Bangor Uncorked That's is right. coming up. The Harvest Festival is coming up. We've got a lot of special tastings coming up in the holiday season that we're scheduling now. Good times coming up. Good chatting with you. Go listen to some Tom Petty. It'll make you smile.
It's a good plan. Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.
Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Message in the bottle every Tuesday. And, of course, all of Eric's segments posted up on the website. Just click on the Message in the Bottle tab. They're all there for you.